from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, that ball's crushed. That ball's into the bullpen. Gone, home run. Yordan Alvarez punishes that pitch into right center field for his 20th home run of the year.
What up, H-Town? Hey!
How we doing?
He's Blank.
That
I'm Branham.
Destroyed.
That's the home run.
Second deck on a line. This guy is in a different world. Air Yordan. Just give him player of the month already.
Double dong Yordan Alvarez. Home runs.
Johnny Davis, Taco Bell.
Yesterday, 20 and 21 for Yordan Alvarez, who you wake up today, Yordan Alvarez is leading baseball in OPS. One of the best hitters, maybe the best hitter in all of baseball. Blank, Branham, Brendan behind the glass. Aaron Judge has more homers. Doesn't have as good as an OPS. No one has as good an OPS
Everybody's
right now.
Everybody's going to pull a stat that favors their guy, though, right?
Sure. Trout's, which one do you think is the most important?
Trout's been
Trout
red
leads
hot.
The league in war,
yep.
And which he always does.
Well, he caught fire in the Seattle series and hasn't stopped hitting home runs since.
So, kind of getting ready for the show today, yep. I had an epiphany. I had a moment where it just hit me.
To wear a Shane Battier jersey over a t-shirt?
I am wearing a Shane Battier jersey today. Everybody on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975 can see that. If you're listening the old school way, which we love you. Yeah, I am wearing a Shane Battier jersey to Troll Blankers. I was cleaning out the office the other day, found this, forgot I had it.
How did you get it?
I found two jerseys. My cousin gave it to me. Okay. Because if you remember, I've told you that I've never bought a jersey in my life. I didn't buy the Shane Battier jerseys, but I figured today, because the Rockets could be changing the trajectory of their organization, that I should wear it. So I have the Shane Battier. Who's your daddy Battier jersey on right now? But Yordan Alvarez getting the win yesterday. Astros win 5-3, blah, 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 blah. They sweep the two-game series over the New York Mets. That's fantastic. A great way to start the Gotham gauntlet at 2-0. But as I was looking at Yordan and I was getting ready for today's show, it hit me that we are all witnesses to one of the greatest individual offensive seasons in Houston Astro history. We've seen some great ones. Jeff Bagwell won an MVP in 1994. We've seen Craig Biggio in 98 have an incredible season. We had some years with Lance Berkman. Heck, Richard Hidalgo, ooh, back when everybody was roiding, not saying Hidalgo was, but back in the steroid era at Minute Maid Park early in that building's history, had some fantastic seasons as well, one in particular. But looking at Yordan Alvarez, who's on pace for 50 home runs, by the way, the club record is 47, set by Jeff Bagwell in 2000. And also, Yordan currently has the second-best OPS in Houston Astro history for a single season, behind only Bagwell's 1994 year. He had like a 1,200 OPS, which is just outrageous and will never be touched. We're witnessing Yordan Alvarez produce one of the greatest individual offensive seasons in Houston Astro history. We're all witnesses to it.
I think it's amazing. And I think that from where he came from, how they acquired him, what he's been able to do, it was just a few short years ago, we were worried about his knees. We were worried about his legs. We didn't know if he was ever going to be able to fulfill his potential because of the fact that, you know, he didn't look like he had, you know, good medicals on his wheels. And to see where he's come from, the fact that we had concerns about him playing the field and what position could he actually play, and now he's been playing some fairly regular left field to get some reps there and hasn't looked, you know, bad. Mm-hmm. He's had his moments. And just from an offensive perspective, the fact that that was a guy that was not figuring and factoring into your future of staying atop the American League, and now he is as prominent as any player other than Kyle Tucker in what your future and why it looks bright is going to be for the Houston Astros.
He's single-handedly extending the window of the Astro golden era. Like, we'll see if Kyle Tucker ever gets extended, but if not, he's here for at least the next 3 years. But Yordan Alvarez, for the next six seasons, you throw Jeremy Pena into the mix. Like, we've brought up the new big three for the Houston Astros with the help of some of the older guys is what's going to extend this golden age of Houston Astro baseball. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Yordan Alvarez, when you watch, like, because we always hear about this too, like, it's must-watch TV for every single one of his at-bats. And it also, to your point, shows you how quickly things change in sports. Because coming into this year, and look, Jordan played most of the season last year coming off of the double knee surgery, which wiped away that COVID season, which was terrible to see, and it was awful for a young player, and it gave you concerns about him long-term and his health. Although he looks very healthy, he still runs fast and plays okay in the outfield, even though I don't want him to play defense. Like, he's on pace for 50 homers, and I hate to do the on-pace stuff, but do you think he breaks Jeff Bagwell's record? He said hit 47 in 2000. Do you think Jordan Alvarez will pass that mark, which is the most homers hit in a single season in Houston Astro history?
I think he will. I think he will, and I think that, you know, it's a different era, and unless the baseballs are screwed with again, you know, I think
they
that
can't
this,
get, they can't get more dead, right?
Yeah, this guy, just the way, you know, when you look at the exit velocity on the majority and his average exit velocity, but on the balls that he hits, we're not talking about Dubon home runs that wouldn't get out of any other park that are just way up there that carry over the Crawford boxes. These things are mashed. I mean, that second one in the upper deck in right field is no gimme like at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
That thing is a shot, you know, and the way that he puts the bat to the baseball and barrels it up is just different. And I believe that he's got to stay healthy. And that's why you look at all these things, that as much as I was saying about what where he came from with his legs and everything else, you know, you just every time, like the other day, every time something happens at all where he kind of pulls up, you just hold your breath. Because if he just stays on this path and has somewhere close to the consistency, and obviously he's on fire in June, but he just stays consistent at the plate because he's got such a good eye for an average as well as a home run hitter, you know, the sky's the limit for the kid.
Yeah, he's been on a different planet right now. So Bagwell hitting the 47 in 2000, that was the first year that the Houston Astros moved to then Enron Field. Dickey saying on Twitch that it was at the Astrodome. No, it wasn't. The year 2000, the Astros were in their first year at Enron, the first year of what is now Minute Maid Park. So just want to be factual on that. I think he's going to break it, too. Look, everybody's going to say the injury concerns, which I think is a soft stance to get yourself to a soft take, right? Look, the injuries are always going to be a factor for any player. You can always throw, oh, well, if he stays healthy. Like, that's an automatic whenever you're going to have a conversation about sports. I think Jordan Alvarez is going to break the record as well. And I think if he doesn't get it this year, he's going to get it at some point in his big league career. He's still very young. I don't think we've seen the best of Jordan Alvarez, which is scary. We had Todd Callis on a few weeks ago. He said that during the life of this contract that he just signed, he thinks he's going to win an MVP. I agree with him. I think he's going to be a triple crown guy. I think he's going to have a year where he leads the league in average, he leads the league in home runs, and he leads the league in RBIs. And it's amazing that the Astros locked him up to $115 million for 6 years. Just absolute highway robbery. And going back to the two home runs yesterday, Joel, the things that I like to see, we all know that he crushes off-speed, right? He hammers mistakes in the zone, especially the off-speed, especially the changeup. We saw that from Cookie, which is one of the worst nicknames I've ever heard. But Cookie Carrasco throws that changeup in the first inning that Jordan Alvarez hammers out of the ballpark. Second time up, Carrasco tries to bust him high and tight with a fastball. Look, Carrasco doesn't throw mid-90s, so it's 92 fastball and doesn't really ring the same as 95, 97. But because Jordan took advantage of the changeup, the mistake. Cookie tries to bust him inside with a fastball, and what does Jordan do? He yanks it down the right field line and into the second deck at Minute Maid Park. He doesn't have many holes
in
his game.
No, you look at when you do that hot zone and all those other things, and regardless of what the numbers say, it's just, you know, we talk about where Bregman has had his struggles, and a lot of it is that high fastball inside that he normally has either been able to lay off or has been able to really turn on. And Jordan doesn't have those holes in his strike zone. I mean, if you throw it and he's expecting it to some degree, the beauty of it is he might even get caught on his front foot, but he's so damn strong that even if he gets a little bit off balance, the fact that if he puts barrel to it, chances are he could dump it somewhere for a base hit because of the fact that he's got that good eye and he knows, we've been talking about it again as I use Bregman as an example, of a guy that uses all aspects of the field. If he has to, he can take a ball the other way, and it's rare that you see a guy with his kind of pop numbers to hit for the average that he's able to hit for.
See, that's why I think he's going to win a batting title at some point, is because he has the ability, okay, you're behind in the count, or you have two strikes in the count, and the pitcher's trying to attack you away. Yordan Alvarez isn't trying to yank that, right? Like, he's willing to go the other way. And then on top of that, because he's playing at Minute Maid Park and it's 315 down the left field line and you have the Crawford boxes, you can get some cheapies. I mean, Minute Maid Park can help a left-handed power hitter that's trying to go the other way. We saw that with Lance Berkman for a very long time, where he would take advantage of the Crawford boxes from the left side of the plate. But are we watching one of the greatest individual offseason seasons in Houston Astro history? I believe we are. Yordan on pace for 50 home runs. Bagwell holds the club record for 47, set it in the first year of Enrod in 2000. Do you think he passes that mark? 713-780-3776. Couple of other numbers. Second best single season OPS, only behind Bagwell's MVP year that was at the Dome in 94. And then the RBI pace, 122. Berkman, the club record in a year at 136. Here's a second part of this conversation I want to have. Is Alvarez the most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now?
In Houston sports?
There's only one other name that comes to mind for me. Well, professional sports. Is Yordan Alvarez the most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now?
He's maybe back in his glory days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in his glory days, perhaps.
I mean, is Jalen Green the only other answer?
See, the thing with Jalen Green is, what are you replacing? You're replacing, like, we all like Jalen Green.
You're just saying there was only one other answer.
He's not in that conversation for me because Jalen Green's going to be on a 20-25-30 win team. So, no, I think you could replace Jalen Green because their team's not going to be significant.
Verlander?
Yep. That's my other answer. Like, because you have, like, baseball very much is an offensive game, but you also have to have very good pitching too, right?
Right.
And the pitching trying to combat the offense of the other team. Like, I think that those two, I think that's, to me, it's the only two. And if you disagree, 713-780-3776. I think Alvarez is the most irreplaceable player in Houston right now. I think Verlander's a distant second, and I don't think there's anybody else anywhere near them.
Yeah, I would probably tend to agree with you because the Rockets just aren't good yet. And again, I'll say this again. I don't want them to be for another year, but they at least have a guy that it looks like they can build around that's going to be their future star. And we talked about it yesterday. I'm not ready to fully anoint him that yet, but he has all the signs and the makings of a guy that's going to do that. But yeah, for the clear and present right now and the importance of the only winning team in the city, yeah, I would say that probably Yordan is a clear-cut one.
713-780-ESPN. Is Yordan Alvarez going to break Bagwell's single-season home run record? Is Yordan the most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now? And who else is even in that conversation? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. We're just keeping our fingers crossed. We don't get hacked like Berman. All right, coming up next, don't let Alex Bregman get hot. That and Yordan when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. It is also draft day in the NBA. We have plenty of draft talk coming up as soon as the bottom of the hour when Kevin McHale, Basketball Hall of Famer, will join us. Rockets, three picks today. Could change the landscape of their organization, perhaps. 713-780-3776. 7288 is trolling me like I'm trolling you with my Shane Battier jersey, saying it's RBI, not RBIs. If you ever want to trigger me, tell me
it's
that.
True. That is so true.
Tell me that it's RBI, not RBIs, and I will get immediately mad. So great job putting me on tilt. 7288. 8693 saying I think he'll break the record also because he's hitting a lot against this year's AL West pitching. That's a pretty good point. What's also amazing about Yordan is that he's putting together one of the greatest single-season individual years in Houston Astro history, and he's doing it at a time that's post-steroids, not accusing any Astros of using roids, but post-steroid era when the numbers were insane, and he's also doing it at a time where the balls are as dead as they've been for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, the ball thing still has me a little bit how that's allowed. I just, you know, it's because, and you and I've talked
Manfred,
about
this. Hashtag Manfred.
Right. And, you know, I think we both are definitively on the same page in how much we despise and can't stand what Manfred has done, said, and the actions that he's taken or not taken. But I look at that and say, and I think we did a show that had this as part of it, we, you know, months back. But how, it, there's no other league, except maybe golf, but golfers choose their own golf ball. But when you look at it, there's no other league where it is so vital that you should have no business having any involvement in anything with a baseball.
Yeah.
Like a basketball, they changed from Spalding to Wilson, and it was a problem, and it continues to be a problem for the players. But it's a unified problem across the league, and it's a separate company with no affiliation other than a sponsorship agreement. Same thing with football. We know you can deflate the balls a little bit, and we saw that with the New England thing. But overall, everybody plays with the same football, and it doesn't have the impact that the ball does on the game. And for them to be able to play God with the sport itself and determine, like, the balls and how much jump is in them and what can be done with them, I mean, that just in itself, for the from the reputation of the sport itself,
yeah,
is something that you should just – there's different rules and legalities for it, but there should be something that's said where that's almost like tampering. You can't do that.
Every sport manipulates its ball, though. Like, I mean, every sport has standards and regulations for what the ball needs to be. And in baseball, it's been like... the problem that I have with baseball is that it's not transparent. Like, they're right. Lying to you. Oh, yeah, all of a sudden we're playing with two balls. Oh, yeah, we're changing the ball. Like, I'm okay if you're trying to find a parameter to use the ball. Okay, we need it to travel less. The home runs are outrageous. We need it to travel more. The ball's too dead. Like, I can understand trying to find the right sweet spot, but to me, it's the lack of transparency of where I give Manfred no respect.
You also can't – they opened up Pandora's box when they decided in Colorado they were going to do something different to those baseballs than every other baseball in the league.
Yeah. Which is now they're using
right,
a humidifier
but now that's unified.
Part.
But now it's gotten down to, you know – Brandon, please slow your roll here. But now it's depending on how you rub your balls and the mud you put on them and the technique you use with
the
mud.
Who's Brandon?
Brendan.
Oh, okay.
But you look at it and say, there's no way that you should be able to, from city to city or situation to situation, or, you know, if numbers are up with home runs even, you shouldn't be able to dictate mid-season. You shouldn't decide, you know, at the blink of an eye, hey, memo to... You know, the Rawlings, the next shipment of baseballs going out for the next month or so. Let's slow down on the pop inside the Super Bowl inside the ball.
To me, it should be unified for an entire season, too. Like, if you want to go into the offseason and be like, okay, we need to get the home run numbers more consistent to where they are, you know, historically, then okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try to do this in this effort. We're going to work with the very best scientists, but we're going to be honest with the players. So I'm okay with the tinkering and trying to find the right parameters for the baseball. But the lack of transparency, playing with two different baseballs and then doing it without telling anybody is where I find to be ridiculous.
It's like from the NBA perspective. So they were with Spalding for 20, 30 years.
Yep.
They changed to Wilson. The guys had a problem with it. But this is also the same thing that happened. Remember the 1 year that they decided to try a synthetic ball? And it was almost like a Bellotta golf ball. But once they decided to go with it, they stuck with it for the entire year and said, we'll readjust at the end of the year. Same thing with the Wilson ball. They were constantly in the lab trying to do it differently, but they weren't going to put that ball into play until the following season so that everybody played with the same ball, made the same way. And that's the way baseball needs to be. They can't do this whole, oh, in Colorado, let's change it there. Yeah. And, oh, if it's cold out, let's change it there. You can't do that.
To play devil's advocate, I think Manfred's trying to get a consistent ball across the board. But the lack of transparency leads to a lot of distrust that Major League Baseball players have with the commissioner's office. 713-780-ESPN. Do you think Yordan will break Jeff Bagwell's single-season record? Bagwell hit 47 the first year of then-Enron. Shout out, Enron. Yordan's on pace for 50 this year. Does Yordan break that? And is there anybody else that's more irreplaceable in Houston sports than Yordan Alvarez? 713-780-3776. 8437 saying, I still don't want him playing the field. Just another way he could get injured. I completely agree. You know how I feel about this. Like, I understand that he is average as a left fielder. I understand that he doesn't have a negative war, doesn't have a positive war in left field. Like, he's just average in left field, which is great. It's great that he's average in left field because many people didn't think he'd be average in left field. But because he is maybe the best hitter in all of baseball, why run the risk of playing him in left? And I know that the pushback's going to be, well, you got to give Brantley some days off too. Well, great. Don't let Brantley play that day. Don't let Brantley be the designated hitter and not Yordan Alvarez. The worst thing that could happen to this baseball team right now is Yordan Alvarez sustains an injury.
The thing is that you want to, if you want to simplify it for the standpoint that you want options with your designated hitter, so you want him to be able to play, the safest position for him to not get hurt and play a position would be first base. However, from a skill position standpoint, to be able to dig out and scoop the balls and be able to really, with your footwork alone too, be able to manipulate the bag.
Yep.
I think that it's a little bit more challenging, especially with a guy his size, that, you know, it would take a little bit more work. Left field, yeah, he can make mistakes, but sometimes the average fan doesn't realize the mistake he makes when he misses a cutoff man or does, you know, something that a real skilled outfielder would not do, and you can get away with it. But at first base, it's so vital. We see the scoop percentage that Yuli has as opposed to everybody else. And Altuve, because he's got such a weird arm right now and the way he throws to first base, I think that's why you can't put him there and expect to hide him at first base.
Yeah, so that's something that comes into play. I agree. His bat just is too good to be risking him playing average left field. Long term, could he move to first base? Maybe. Even then, I want him to be a DH for the rest of his career. I know that's weird to say for somebody in their mid-20s, but he's too good of a hitter. 713-780-3776. Eric the Driver says, I have a conspiracy theory on the Yordan contract. It's such a team-friendly deal for a generational talent that I think Yordan and his agent agreed because he's planning on spending his entire career with the Astros and shattering Baggy's single season and franchise home run records. I wouldn't go that far. I don't think Yordan Alvarez, when he was signing that contract for 6 years and $115 million, that he was thinking of long-term records. There was two things I believe that Yordan Alvarez signed that contract for. He wanted the guaranteed money up front, didn't want to deal with the arbitration, so the Astros bought out the arbitration years for a raise, and then the Astros in turn got 3 years of free agency, which is a good deal for the team. It's a team-friendly deal, and yeah, Yordan probably cost himself some dollars there. But Yordan also mentioned how comfortable he is with Houston, right? We saw this with Jose Ramirez in Cleveland. Cleveland wanted to trade Jose Ramirez because they didn't think they could afford him the fair market value of Jose Ramirez. And Jose Ramirez went to the Cleveland front office and he's like, look, I'll just sign for less. It's not going to change me as a person making more money than what you're going to give me. I love being here. I want to stay here. That's basically what Yordan Alvarez did to the Houston Astros.
No, it was a win-win for both, but it was really a win for the Astros organization because – if he did decide to just let it play out, you know, and assuming he stays healthy, and there's a lot of assumptions that go with it from a health perspective that aren't always factored in. But if he plays it out and stays anywhere close to what he's been doing, I mean, he starts putting himself in a different stratosphere in terms of some of the biggest contracts that we've ever seen when you hit free agency. But because he had other issues, and maybe it was something where he's very comfortable here and he realizes it's not even a circus or a zoo. It is insane when you are in the media, when you are being grilled by the media in New York, way bigger than L.A., but New York in particular, L.A.'s still pretty harsh. Chicago can be harsh, but the fact that if you go to a bigger city because they got all the money, it's a different ball game in terms of what you have to deal with on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and it's stressful. And I think that the fact that even Beltran, when he came here, they liked the fact that for a big city, it's so relaxed. The media is forgiving. And you can just be yourself. And I think that probably meant something to him and his family, too. It's refreshing on both sides, and it's a huge win if you're an Astros fan.
Nick says on the HRMP listener line, Tucker should be in the conversation, too. Similar age to Yordan, is a plus defender and can hit 280, 25 homers for the next decade, too. We include Tucker. Yeah, that's the thing is he's not under contract. He's still under club control for the next three seasons. Next year will be his first arbitration year, then two more is after that. But we consider Kyle Tucker part of the big three, the young big three. Because yep. The Astros do have a young big three offensively. Yordan, Tucker, Pena. You've locked up Yordan for six seasons. Kyle Tucker has 3 years of club control, and Jeremy Pena after this year still has five, probably, although the rookie of the year can cut that down a little bit with the new CBA, five years of club control after this
season. Him missing with injuries is helping that right now.
Yeah, I still think he finishes top two, top three, probably. Though, which would give him free agency a year earlier. That's confusing with the new CBA. All right, 713-780-3776. Tonight is the NBA draft. Rockets currently own three first-round draft picks. Number three, there's some willing and dealing going on potentially there at number three. Some Vegas movement there at number three. 17 and 26. We're going to talk to Hall of Famer Kevin McHale about the first round of the NBA draft tonight, what the Rockets could potentially do, and what else is going on around the NBA. NBA great Kevin McHale next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line where a Hall of Famer is joining us. Kevin McHale, NBA great, former head coach in the NBA, former GM in the NBA. We'll pick on that expertise in a second. But last time we talked to you, Coach, was ahead of Game 6 of the NBA Finals. And you thought, you know, Celtics body language, not great. You kind of figured the Warriors were going to win Game 6. They did. I want to ask you, from an NBA great that was part of a dynasty, what do you think this NBA Finals means to the Warrior dynasty and to the legacy of Steph Curry?
I think it extends their dynasty, really, because you know, they had three championships in, 6 years? But then for five years, they were out of it. I mean, they, you know, they had injuries. They weren't even in the playoffs. And so they were just an asterisk. And then they got healthy. Klay came back and they played better. So it really extended their run, because a lot of runs end then. If you'd asked me about Golden State, I would have said their run's going to end just like a lot of teams' runs end when their top players get hurt and they can't perform anymore. But this one, you know, extends it, and I really think they have an opportunity now to get into that, which is really hard to do. You know, they're always going to have that 2-year respite in there where they didn't do anything just because of injuries and they weren't together. But if you can start getting into the point where you're relevant for 8-10 years, that's like 2 or 3 a generation in life is, you know, 10 to 15 years. Every generation or so, it changes. In basketball, it's every 3 or 4 years is a generation. And that, you know, that puts them into those categories where very few teams like were able to sustain anything for that long. A lot of the runs are just shorter. You know, the Spurs were unbelievable. The old Celtics of old were unbelievable with Russell and those guys. But a lot of the teams, you know, they had a 2 or 3 or 5 year window where they did really well and played well, and then it was over. I thought that was Golden State, but they proved that to be wrong. And, yeah, I didn't like the body language with Boston. They had kind of demoralized them in Game 5. And, as soon as things started going south in Game 6, you know, Boston kind of folded the tent on that 21-0 run. And so it was frustrating for a Celtics fan. But, you know, the better team won, no question.
Coach, if you're looking at that from the perspective of trying to keep that group together, they're ready already over the cap. They have 7 guys that are free agents. And Bob says that he expects to try and keep all of them. I mean, how realistic is that? How difficult of a challenge is that going to be to try and keep that group together when you have the likes of Poole and some of the guys that were key contributors that could go out and get more money elsewhere?
Well, it's going to be tough, boy. You know, the one thing is you can pay your own guys what you want, but the luxury tax becomes so penalizing that it's hard to do that. It's going to be really, really interesting. You know, you got Wiseman coming up. You got these young guys in there that will probably have a bigger role during the regular season. I think Kerr is going to try to just nurse Green along and Klay Thompson and Steph to the regular season, probably give them some time off and some other stuff. Let the younger guys take over for a while. So their value will go up. It's going to be hard to keep that group together. Poole's done a tremendous job there. They developed and went from the G League up and played really well. And there are teams out there that are saying, hey, we want to get some guys that come from winning teams. And, you know, when you come from a winning team, that always makes a big difference. I know that, you know, if you've been around a winning culture, and so many of these guys haven't been, it just gives you a leg up. And so, I'm sure that all those guys are going to be having value, be valued by other teams out there, and the money's going to get ridiculous if they're going to try to keep everybody together.
Hall of Famer Kevin McHale joining us on the HR&P guest line, also coach in the NBA, general manager in the NBA, drafted Kevin Garnett. Whenever you look at this draft, asking you to put your GM hat on for a second, how do you view, especially the top 3 picks with the Rockets selecting number 3 tonight?
Well, I think the Rockets are in good shape. They're going to get a really good player. I think it's some of those big wings that are there. Yeah, I really like them. If those two, if the two two big wings go, and all of a sudden you're left with Holmgren, and maybe you're not a Holmgren fan. I don't know. If you're not, that's a good time to trade back three or four spots. There's teams out there that are probably dying to, you know, get Holmgren there at three, and move and get another big wing, get another guy that, you know, that plays a little different. Even though, you know, Holmgren's 7'2" probably, very very, you know, light body, very light frame. But he moves his feet well and can guard. But, you know, it depends on what you want. I would say right now, if you're Houston, hopefully you've done all your due diligence and have some move back ability. If the two guys, if you really like two of the three guys and the two guys are gone, one and two, that's a good time to move back to 5, 6, 7. You can pick up extra draft choices. You can do some other stuff and probably get a big high quality wing. Because right now, the big man is, you know, really kind of not that important in the league. You look at, you look at Golden State, who they won with their big. I mean, being a big guy in this league right now is not that important.
Okay, Coach, keep the hat on, because I've always been intrigued by this, and I know some degree what happens at the office. But when does it start heating up as a general manager, and can you go home? What's the last 24 hours like heading into a draft in terms of, you mentioned, from the whiteboards that I know that were in all the basketball guys' offices and the where you had the scenarios laid out in terms of if your guy's there or not, to when does the phone stop ringing? Is there a time you go home and sleep? I mean, it's got to be unbelievable, the last 24 hours or so leading into the draft.
Yeah, it is. I think that, if you're going to get trades done and it's a bigger trade and you want to get stuff done, it's usually like the day before the draft or the morning of. Those last few days, everybody, it gets hectic. And you talk to a lot of teams, and then you just got to call up and say, look, we talked about X, Y, and Z. Will you do it? And if the answer is no, everybody moves on. You get more rejection in the last 24 hours. All these trades you talked about, everything goes away. Some happen. But right now, everybody's on the phone trying to. And then you know what happens? About 2 o'clock this afternoon, 3 o'clock this afternoon, you know, everything's pretty much set, and you go into it. Every once in a while, you'll have that crazy call that comes in, and you try throwing a deal together within 5 minutes, which is really hard to do. But it's exciting, and yeah, you don't sleep very well. You sleep well tonight, that's for sure, because you haven't been sleeping well for the last 10 days. But tonight, if you're the GM, you go to bed after the draft, and you know your team's pretty much assembled. You try to go to work, getting them together to play in the summer.
Coach, you've been in this spot before. I'm sure you've had young teams that you've either, you know, with the GM of, coached, or played on. Knowing the Rockets have a very youthful roster and putting a lot of, you know, a heavy load on the young players, namely Jalen Green, the Rockets have 3 first-rounders tonight. Do you think they will use them all or maybe try to couple, you know, maybe the last two to move up in the draft?
Well, you know, man, I tell you what, I would use my picks to move out of the draft. I think I'd pick 3, and then unless there's somebody that you're dying to get at 10, 11, 12, and maybe try to package up. What do they have, 17 and something else?
Yep.
And 20-something.
26.
And it, 26, yeah. Then, you know, try to use those to move up some. But if not, man, there's going to be teams that want people at 17. You get their first-round pick next year. You got to be selective as to what you do. When I left Boston, I went to Minnesota, and I helped out my first year there. They had all young guys. They had no leadership, and it was a disaster. I looked at it and thought, oh, my God. My first year in the NBA, the player, we had all veteran guys, and those young guys, Larry and I, were really the only 2 young guys on the team. And I thought, what a difference. I'm watching these guys. I'm thinking they're learning how to lose. They're just, you know, and I think I've never liked that. That just, you know, I've never liked getting 5 or 6 young guys all together, all competing with each other for the top dog spot. And they're more interested in competing with each other than they are with the other team. And I'm not a big fan of that. I think Houston's young. They got some talent. You take your guy at 3. You move around. You try to get a couple of veterans in. You maybe, you know, you try to stock up some draft choices for the future, but getting younger right now is just going to be a disaster. I don't think Coach Silas can. I don't think Coach Silas or any coach can handle that. It's too hard.
All right, Coach. If you sit there and look at what Kyrie Irving is trying to do to manipulate the Nets, he played 60% of the games over the last 3 years. He sits out whenever he wants to, but yet he believes he should get a fully guaranteed max deal for 4 years. The Nets are said to be basically saying, no, hold on, we're going to do a shorter-term deal, and there's going to be clauses in games played, and he's not too happy about that. Is there another team in the league that conceivably would say, yeah, I'm signing up for that for 4 years guaranteed money, and he can continue to do whatever the hell he wants to do?
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, he just, you know, he just has not been available, and he's taken off some time. He's got personal time, and it just sounds like everything you hear, and actually even in Boston, it was really disruptive. You know, you don't hear about a lot of that until he leaves. But he's very disruptive in Boston, too, to the team and to the whole chemistry. And I don't think so. I think that he's going to find himself in a situation where he's going to have a contract that's going to have a lot of clauses in there, games played, minutes played, you know, whatever. And he's going to have to deal with it. I mean, that's just the bet he has made in the NBA. He doesn't have to sleep in it now.
Kevin McHale, always great getting your insight, especially on the day of the NBA draft, in which the Rockets have three first-rounders, a big day for this franchise. Coach, always appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up again very soon.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Kevin McHale, basketball legend, Hall of Famer, sharing some insight. 713-780-ESPN. We'll talk plenty of draft throughout the rest of the show. 713-780-3776. But coming up next, Lovie Smith, of all the first-year head coaches, I know it's Lovie Smith's third job in the NFL, but of all the new first-year head coaches, why Lovie Smith has the least pressure of them all. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Big news in the Manning household today. Arch Manning created a Twitter today, lists his bio, high school student. His profile picture, him playing high school football. And in his, what is it, a cover photo, I think they call it? I'm a boomer here. It's his team, his high school team there in Louisiana, New Orleans, talking together. But his one post, he created this today, an hour ago, his one post... committed to the University of Texas, hashtag hook'em. Arch Manning is headed to the 40 acres. He's going to be a Longhorn.
It is a big deal if you're Steve Sarkisian, because forever in a day, maybe since Vince Young, and you can go and you can tell me about guys that have had, you know, the major Apple Whites or the guys that, you know, were decent. But when you look at, like, really, really big-time quarterbacks, we can say it about both schools, with the exception of a Heisman year for Johnny Manziel. But you look at it and go, with the ability to have such an unbelievable campus, facilities, and have every resource, you know, known to college sports given to you, it's amazing that those two programs, and especially with, as I refer to Texas, hasn't been able to get a quarterback because they've had, you know, basically all the skill positions covered to where it could have made a huge difference. Now Sarkisian comes there. And within a year's time or so of being on campus, to land a recruit that everybody's been talking about for the last couple of years, and we know the bloodlines,
yeah,
that's a massive get for Texas.
It is, but it does create some chaos there, right? Because Quinn Ewers, who went to Ohio State originally out of South Lake Carroll, I think he got a $1.4 million NIL, graduated high school early to go there, and has since transferred to Texas and is currently projected to be their starting quarterback this year. So if, like, Quinn Ewers goes out there and balls out, like, he can't go to the NFL draft until one more year after that because he's only a redshirt freshman. You have to be 3 years removed from high school. Like, they have a little bit of a situation on their hands because I'm sure they're not recruiting Arch Manning to be the understudy of Quinn Ewers, but Quinn Ewers could put Texas in a position where if he plays really well next year, there's no way you can bench him.
No, and I think that, you know, that you hope that's a conversation that they already had with Arch Manning. Like, look, you know what? At a certain point, we're turning the keys over to you and it's going to be yours. But we've seen this happen at Ohio State and at other programs that you can have an all-world quarterback in the waiting for your guy that's your all-world quarterback now to get done with his last year, you know, one more year or whatever it takes before he decides to move on. And then you step in and then you get that just, you know, progression of just quarterbacks coming through on their way to the NFL. And then you're in a really good position in terms of how you sit in college football. But for in order to be able to get that kind of in motion, you've got to get a guy like you just got. And you can't turn your back on him, right? Because as much as you got a guy that had chosen Ohio State first, and that's a great get, and you were going to make them a better team next year, you can't sit there and say, same way when we talk about the Texans, just because you have Davis Mills, if the opportunity presents itself in next year's draft to get one of the top two quarterbacks in the draft that could be an all-world quarterback in the NFL, you can't just go, no, we got ours, we're good.
It's funny that you said that because I was talking to Brendan earlier, and I said, is Quinn Ewers the Davis Mills of Texas Longhorn football?
There you go.
He's got his 1 year to prove it, and if he does prove it, now you're putting yourself in a difficult decision. But if he doesn't play well, then it makes the decision very easy for Sarkisian. It makes the decision very, very easy for Nick Caserio. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary wants to talk Arch Manning. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? So, I'm actually, college football is my favorite sport by like a wide, wide margin. I'm a huge UT guy. And actually, the Mannings are okay with Arch redshirting his freshman year. The high school that he plays at is kind of like a lower level rich kid school.
Newman.
So they wouldn't mind giving him 1 year to redshirt under Quinn Ewers because Quinn will start this year. Mm-hmm. Then Arch arrives to campus next year, which will be supposedly Quinn's last year if he's what he's supposed to be. So he'll only be on campus for one redshirt year, which he'll need to adjust. Coming from this very small school in Louisiana. So if everything works out well, this should be a perfect bridge situation for university. I hope it does.
I'm glad you called in and said that, Gary, because I actually, to the group of friends I talked to about sports, I actually mentioned that. Like, I see a path that Arch Manning could redshirt his first year, because Gary's right. He goes to Newman High, which is this very prestige area in New Orleans. I think it's Newman. I think it's where Odell Beckham Jr. went, too, actually. But, he's right. It's like playing, it's like private school football, which is not the same as going to Texas and playing what will still be the Big 12, actually.
It's like putting St. John's or Episcopal up against Katy or North Shore.
Exactly. I think now private school football is a little bit more popular in Louisiana than it is in Houston. So I think that their private school is better than ours, but slightly. I still think it's a very good comp. Like, yeah, it's a huge step up if you're now talking Katy, now talking North Shore from a high school football scene. But Gary's right. I mean, Quinn Ewers can play this year as a redshirt freshman. If he plays really well, he's going to still be the starting quarterback as a redshirt sophomore. Now he's 3 years removed out of high school. He goes to the NFL. And also keep in mind, like, you're not signing Arch Manning to redshirt, but keep in mind the college football rules now. You can appear in up to four games and still redshirt. So he could still get some run and still get some snaps, but still redshirt.
On that note, because you're the expert here, I want to ask you, what's the rule in terms of when do you become NFL eligible? Because he already had the year.
You're talking about Ewers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 3 years removed from high school.
Okay, so because I was going to say, so the year counts that he started at Ohio State and transferred
There's probably an age thing there, too. But, yeah, he would be draft eligible after his second season Texas, but it would be Arch's first.
Okay. So
there
would be
overlap.
Yeah, there would be some overlap. That's what I was curious about, because then would the Manning family be okay if he's still going to play out his final? He's been doing great, so you want to stick with him and then turn it over to Arch Manning.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a freshman quarterback to learn the ropes either.
I agree with that.
Even one as prestigious as Arch Manning.
But, you know, everybody's on that speed course to try and get to the NFL as fast as possible.
It's one of the things I hate most about college football, to be honest with you, is you have these great high school recruits that, you know, they're top five quarterbacks in the entire nation, and they'll go to, you know, a prestigious school, a blue blood, but they're not patient. Like, you get there and you already have, like, a Heisman Trophy candidate ahead of you. Like, you would think, okay, learn from the guy for a year and then compete in the second season. You see nowadays, if I'm not playing over a Heisman candidate my freshman season, I'm going to transfer.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre.
Yeah, and we've seen it over and over again. Look, we saw what happened with Joe Burrow. We saw even, you know, a Spencer Rattler type guy. You know, all these guys are ready to jump ship if they're not the guy. Georgia's been like a rotating door, for a while now, too, because of the fact that everybody believes they're better than everybody else and it should be just given to them. But it would be interesting because of the fact that if no other position – you don't want to see a guy like Arch Manning go in and have anything end up being a little bit too big for him the first year, and then he gets crushed. Or, you know, we don't want to see a David Carr-like syndrome, right? You just the same way, when you get into the NFL, especially because of the fact that, you know, he could come out a little earlier, you just want to make sure that he is a grown man when he's ready to take the reins in the NFL, because that's a whole different ballgame. If he is who everybody believes him to be with his bloodlines and everything else, and he turns out to be that way, there's nothing wrong with you know, sitting a redshirt year and learning the ropes, then playing a couple years of college so that when you get to the NFL, you're not still a kid waiting for one more kind of filling out growth spurt where you're ready to take it all on and be, you can handle it all.
Yeah, I think Gary laid out the perfect plan for Texas, that if it all works well, that that's the way that it would go. Ewers really good this year, really good next year, off to the NFL. Arch Manning willing to sit behind Ewers for a year and then take over after that. That's best case scenario. Then you have like a Hudson Card who's in the mix as well. I'm sure he's going to be looking to get his way out. 8693 says, now we got to listen to BK gloat for 4 hours today.
Probably true.
He's going to let especially
Stoots
have it.
Why, Kansas got somebody?
Oh. Yeah, that's right. He's a big big Texas football fan and a big Kansas basketball fan. 3581, you sure David Carr is a good example to use? I think his issue is more PTSD from a horrendous offensive line than anything
else. But it's also being able to take the hits. I mean, that's kind of where I was getting at. From the standpoint of filling out and being physically strong enough and fast enough so that you can avoid some and the ones you take don't have that long-lasting effect. I get what happened to David Carr, but that was because as an expansion franchise, your entire offensive line was starting over with you.
Yeah, I think you meant more like speed of the game.
Yes.
Like it's difficult to go from a private school in New Orleans to the Big 12. The question I was having earlier is, does Arch Manning spend more time in the Big 12 than he does the SEC?
That's a good question.
Because now it's kind of a double entendre question, right? When does Texas go to the SEC? 0025, can't wait to watch Manning cast in a few years whenever Archie plays. Arch
Manning. Not Archie.
It's Arch for Archie. But that would be interesting, watching old Eli and Peyton Manning talk about old Arch Manning playing college football at Texas. That'd be riveting. Riveting stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, I hope the kid pans out to be what everybody is expecting him to be. But we know how sometimes the second and third generations down the line don't pan out. But the Manning family would be one that has done very well. And it would be fun to see another Manning, you know, start getting ready to make a run in the NFL and see what he can do. But I think it's a huge get for Sarkisian. I think it's big for the Texas football program, and it kind of speeds up the kind of overall overhaul that Sarkisian's trying to do since taking over.
King of Twitch saying, too much hype around this kid, bound to be a bust. We'll see. Didn't really affect LeBron. Didn't really affect Vince Young.
Every situation is different, but it's a fair point, because how many times have we talked about, when you're the next generation of the man, mm-hmm. how many still end up being the man? Aside from Barry Bonds or Ken Griffey Jr. in baseball, you look at it and say, you know, Michael Jordan's kids, one at least played college basketball, but you know, they were never even close. And more times than not, the second generation, it doesn't live up to the hype.
It is a fair point. 713-780-3776. All right, coming up next, let's get to the Lovie Smith thing. Lovie has the least pressure of any new first-year head coach in the NFL. We tell you why next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.